Welcome in to You're the Cure right here on AM 580. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, here on the show. Of course, brought to you by Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. Past archived programs, you can certainly check it out there. And other important information, veritasmedical.com. Of course, along the way, if you have any questions, comments, feel free to give us a text on the text line, 806-745-5800. That's 806-745-5800. Well, good morning, Dr. Edwards. How are you doing?
Doing good, Wade.
Well, it's been a while since we've shared a microphone. I think it's almost, I was saying, well, we've done shows. Of course, last week we were at Labor Day, but I thought, man, I haven't actually seen the whites of your eyes in almost a month.
Yeah.
So here you are, live
I've
back in
you.
Studio.
I missed you too.
Yeah, man. So anyway, no, it's good to see you back in studio. And, of course, and it never fails. When we were running the Dr. Caroline Leaf show a week before last, and, you know, people were texting in, I just sat here, listened to their show. It was a great show, by the way.
Yeah, she's awesome.
But I felt bad because I would have to text back to the text people thinking, oh, he's live on the air with,
right.
And so I would text back and say, no, I'm sorry, it's a recording. No, I'm sorry, it's a recording. And they're like, oh, I had a question.
Just a lot of these folks aren't as accommodating as Morley Robbins is.
Yep.
And their schedules don't allow for them to be live, so we do record some, like Caroline Leaf. And then I met a lot of doctors this weekend at a conference I was at, but a lot of them are international or California time, so we do record some.
You have to, and it's okay. It's not a problem. Well, anyway, so Morley Robbins with us back again on the what is essentially the first Monday of the month, because a Labor Day week. We didn't
right.
have a Monday because of the weekend, but what are we? So he's back.
Yeah, so we got a lot to cover today with Morley. And for those longtime listeners, I've heard y'all that July 1st interview we did with Morley, first Monday of July, it didn't record appropriately. So we're going to try to revisit a couple of those topics, one of which was zinc. Do we really need to take zinc? What's the deal about zinc supplementation? Then copper IUDs and other sources of non-bioavailable copper pipes and stuff. So we'll try to hit a couple of those highlights again. But I wanted to start with, because it's fresh on my mind, I was at this conference in California, San Jose, over the weekend. It was an EMF conference. It was a very large conference, 300 docs from around the world. It's really fascinating. Of course, I've learned a little bit about EMFs. Now I know a whole lot about EMFs, and what I'm talking about is electromagnetic fields. So this is stuff that's in your environment that you can't see. So your cell phone is constantly sending a signal off to the cell phone tower and vice versa, the cell phone tower back to your cell phone. Your Wi-Fi is transmitting microwaves. People understand the microwave that you warm up your food. There's waves, these invisible waves that bring energy and heat up your food. Well, there's different frequencies of these waves that are coming out of all these different electronic devices, and they can impact cellular communication and cellular function. So fascinating weekend. There are doctors from everywhere. There was Dr. Ole Johansson, one of the world's leading experts. He's from Sweden. Dr. Munoz Calero from Spain. There was a Dr. Belpalmi from, he's a leading physician in Paris. Dr. Erica Mallory Blythe, she's from England. There's a doctor from Israel. It was fascinating stuff. One of the interesting side notes that I guess I didn't realize, the FCC, there's a revolving door between the FCC and these big telecom companies, just like there is with the FDA and drug companies, the CDC and the vaccine manufacturers. There's this revolving door between the heads of the companies and the heads of these government divisions. So it was kind of disheartening, all the research that was presented, and then the lack of response from these government agencies. But here's the take-home message for me, almost probably to a man, these doctors presented these cases, and the driving point they made was these folks that are extremely EMF sensitive. So there's some patients who cannot walk into an environment that has any of these man-made EMFs. Now, understand there are natural EMFs out in nature, and the sun produces radiation. There's all different natural EMFs, but then there's the man-made versions. And some patients cannot tolerate that environment. Case after case after case report, one in particular, a pretty famous cardiologist, Dr. Sinatra, he's an integrative cardiologist back on the East Coast, and his son, Step, got so sick, down to like 80 pounds, couldn't eat, was about to die. I mean, he was in the hospital for over a month, was on IV nutrients, and EMF was a thing that just put him over the edge. And, of course, in a hospital room, there's EMFs everywhere because you've got all the electronics there in the hospital. But the point, all these doctors, I noticed they were saying that these patients that are so sensitive, they had multiple things happen to them over the course of their life. You know, there's one patient that had carbon monoxide poisoning as a 2-year-old, and then had a bunch of mercury fillings put in his teeth as a 7- and 8-year-old. And then he had a couple of car wrecks with whiplash, and that disrupted C1. And there's a lot of neurological information that transfers from your brain down to your body through C1. And if those nerves are impinged a little bit by the misalignment of your spine that happens with whiplash or head trauma. There was mold exposure. There was Lyme disease. So it was a stacking effect. People had multiple different exposures, and then boom, they become EMF sensitive. So that was one take home, is that it typically took multiple exposures to different stressors. Second take home was the mechanism of action, which is how do these EMFs actually hurt you? And so what all the published research shows, and that's the thing, tons of published papers, lots of published data on this, international and in the U.S., totally ignored by the FCC apparently. But all these papers point to the same thing, oxidative stress. There was one paper presented by a doctor from Japan. He quoted 100 different studies. He looked at the literature and just pulled 100 of these studies. All of them said the same thing. Oxidative stress is what these EMFs caused, oxidative stress in the brain, leading to whatever disease, Alzheimer's. Oxidative stress in the liver, oxidative stress, you name the body part. So it was the same common theme we've talked about a lot. Inflammation / oxidative stress is how these EMFs really impact the cells and damage the cells. So here's what I want listeners to take home from this. Multiple stressors in most of these patients' lives, and then the EMFs put them over the edge. And the way that all these things hurt us is through oxidative stress. So I'm hoping the listeners are starting to have some aha moments. If you've been a long-time listener, oxidative stress is the same thing we talk about in the mitochondria. When you make energy, your mitochondria, the carburetor, has got to make energy for your cells to function. During that process of making energy, you make reactive oxygen species or free radicals, these oxidants that will oxidize or rust you. You make those naturally when you're making energy. But the body's equipped with antioxidant enzymes. These enzymes move in and they take care of those free radicals. And it's this beautiful balance. You make energy, you make a little exhaust, the body clears the exhaust appropriately. You keep inflammation, oxidative stress at a minimum because the machine is just functioning like it's supposed to. Perfectly well-designed machine will function like it's supposed to. You can handle oxidative stress if you have the equipment in your cell to handle it. That's the bottom line. We are designed to handle oxidative stress, but you need the equipment to handle it. So how I looked at all these patients was, I'm sure they were demineralized. I'm sure they were full of excess iron because of iron-fortified foods. I'm sure their ceruloplasm, which is your main oxidative stress fireman, that's what goes in there and puts out the fires of free radicals and oxidative stress, is ceruloplasm. I'm sure their ceruloplasm was devoid of copper because of the things we've talked about, overexposure to antibiotics, overexposure to synthetic vitamin D, overexposure to birth control pills and high fructose corn syrup. Ascorbic acid, which is a synthetic vitamin C. All these things in the modern lifestyle and diet that that destroy the copper that's inside your ceruloplasm. So now you've just disarmed your main antioxidant. So all these patients went in with very little antioxidant enzyme capacity. They walked in to these environments as just a sitting target. I mean, they're just a sitting duck, ready to be wiped out. And then boom, carbon monoxide, that's a stressor. That's an oxidative stressor. Then boom, amalgams, the mercury and the amalgams leach out. I think I have a dentist on next week. I just remembered that we'll talk about that, the mercury, and all the studies that talk about the mercury. But that's an oxidative stressor. The mold toxins, these biotoxins, they're deadly. But your body should be able to handle them as long as you're not overwhelmingly exposing yourself to these things. So can
we pull the curtain back a little bit further?
Go for it, Morley.
So people who are super sensitive, just as you've noted, are undermineralized.
Yes.
The people with low levels of magnesium and low levels of bioavailable copper and excess iron are creating excessive amounts of oxidative stress.
Just that right there, without any other environmental stressor, just the fact you're demineralized, low bioavailable copper, high iron, low mag, you're already an oxidative stress machine without enough antioxidant capacity, without any other stressor.
And so we drive cars that we know have energy. Again, a friend of mine characterized it from his college days. He was taking a chemistry class. He said, ladies and gentlemen, let me make sure you understand how powerful gasoline is. 1 gallon of gasoline will push a car 25 miles. That's a kind of a powerful thought. So we drive these cars that have energy, produce energy, and they produce exhaust. But we don't see the exhaust. That's the body in balance, just as you're describing it. When the body has natural rhythm, natural balance, everything's fine. When the car starts to produce smoke coming out the exhaust, that's called inflammation. And when the car stops working, that's called cell death. Yeah. And as the level of oxidants builds in phase 2, that's inflammation, and in phase 3, that's called cellular toxicity. That's when all the problems occur. And people who are sensitive can get exposed to a stressor like EMFs. What that EMF does is it destabilizes the magnesium in a very important channel called the voltage-gated calcium channels. When magnesium's sitting in there the way it's supposed to, everything's good. Now, it's called a calcium channel, and you would think magnesium must be guarding and preventing calcium from getting it. No, when magnesium gets bumped out because of the stress of the EMF, iron enters the cell. And it's one of the quirky things about how the cells work. And so hypersensitive people like Dr. Sinatra's son, I find it fascinating that a gifted physician like that would have a son so compromised, but he obviously doesn't fully understand minerals. And his son gets exposed to this electromagnetic frequency. It affects his magnesium status, which then is ultimately going to affect his ability to make energy. And iron starts flooding into the cells, and then the cells can't produce energy. And then they create more exhaust. That's the dynamic of a supersensitive body. And it's just, we've always got to be demystifying this process. Because it's always coming back to the same process.
Right.
Stress causes mineral imbalance, causes electrolyte confusion, which then creates energy loss.
Yeah,
that's the process in every mammal on the planet. Responds to stress the exact same way. And we are mirror images of each other. Even though we look different on the outside, our physiology responds the exact same way inside.
Yeah, and I will say with Step Sinatra, he described four or five, six years, I forget exactly, that he was a trader on Wall Street. He was living in Manhattan, 43rd sure. floor. He was in this 14-hour a day on the floor at Wall Street with, you know, three yep. cell phones and 100 guys running around him, and they're trading all day and just a super, super fight or flight mode for 4, 5, 6 years in a row. And obviously that whole yep. time, mag is just pouring out of his cells.
Right. And there were stimulants by day and stimulants by night, I'm right. sure, in that yep. lifestyle.
So I want the listeners to think about one of these balances, you know, like Lady Justice. There's a balance on both sides. There's a tray. And on the one side is all these different stressors that can drive oxidative stress, and I've already named a bunch of them. But anything basically bad that you're chasing as a patient, you want to chase X, Y, or Z thing, those are stressors on one side, but on the other side of the balance are your antioxidant enzymes, ceruloplasmin being the main one, your body's natural ability to handle this oxidative stress. You need to obviously not just focus on offloading all the stressors, trying to avoid every single EMF in the world and trying to avoid every single bad thing. Yes, offload what you can and don't ignore it and don't purposefully consume these things that you know are going to push the balance in the stressor side. But at the same time, you've really got to build the other side. You've got to build your antioxidant capacity. And that's what this whole, all these first Mondays with Morley is all about, is how do we build our natural antioxidant reserve? And it's all about this mineral balance. Bring bioavailable copper up and get iron out and bring the mag up, and that'll bring some sanity back to your mineral balance. So I think people can get a better understanding. Or don't get too pigeonholed or tunnel vision on your symptom, on your diagnosis, your disease, and these different stressors. Again, I'm not saying ignore the stressors. You need to offload stressors, but you need to really build your capacity to handle the stressor. Okay, so Morley question. Copper, yeah. Bioavailable copper. This we'll be able to tackle one of the July 1st questions. When people are exposed to other forms, and copper was mentioned at the conference, I'll tell you, and I was able to speak to that. You know, everybody was talking about, well, there's high copper on the hair test and high copper on this and high copper toxicity and blah, blah, blah. And I got to try to teach a little bit on, no, the copper's just unbound. It's out of the ceruloplasm. Get it back in the ceruloplasm. So these other external...
And you survived. I'm impressed.
Yeah, right. I'm living this, yeah. to tell the story. So other forms of copper, this could be copper supplements in a bottle. This could be copper IUDs, intrauterine device for contraception, copper pipes. There's one lady in California describing copper that was in the ditch water, in the irrigation water that kids were playing in, and that copper came from something, I don't know, some pesticide or fertilizer or something. So these other forms of copper people are exposed to, can you touch on that briefly? What does that do in the body? Is that beneficial? Does that get in and somehow able to get into the ceruloplasm and help out? Does that impede? What about these other forms of copper?
Right. So first thing we have to do is remember that for every atom of copper in the body, there's 60 atoms of iron. Let that sink in. 60 atoms of iron for every atom of copper. And society has been trained like circus bears to focus on the copper as the bad guy. Now, both copper and iron have similar properties. They're the only two metals that can work with oxygen. But there's a big difference between the way they work. Iron carries it and causes rust. And copper activates it and then deactivates it if it becomes an oxidant. Those are profoundly different properties between iron and copper. The form of copper that you're talking about is typically in a plus two state, and ideally it needs to be reduced to a plus one state. Part of the challenge we've got is that the reductase enzymes that cause that reduction, to take one of those electrons away, the work is done by bacteria in our gut. And the bacteria in our gut has been reduced by antibiotics. It was not an accident that the reductase bacteria were affected by antibiotics. So then we got to come back to the fact that there's 60 atoms of iron. People have got to stop obsessing about copper and start really putting their focus on, wow, I've got a lot of iron in my body. And so people should take their age, subtract 18 from it, and then multiply that by 365. And that's the amount of iron you have in your body. And for women, it should be 4,000 milligrams. And for guys, it should be 5,000 milligrams. And I'm confident the listeners who are doing this arithmetic exercise have a multiple of that. That iron is violently reactive in your body, especially when it gets stuck in your tissue, especially the recycling macrophages that we've talked about, the Pac-Men that recycle iron every day. We're only supposed to have 1 milligram of iron in our diet each day. We're being programmed to have anywhere from 40 to 70 milligrams of iron. We don't have any, there's no filter that's a problem. I was reading an article last night that was talking about women who take prenatals could take as much as 250 milligrams of iron every day. People don't realize the scale of insanity of that daily habit. And the iron, we would assume, well, the iron must leave the body, right? No. The body is designed to hold on to iron because it knows how important it is.
Yeah, there's no known excretory pathway for iron. The body doesn't have a mechanism to get rid of it.
So where does it finally come out at? I mean, liver?
It stores. It stores in the liver. It stores in other glandular tissue, stores in the joints, I mean, all over the body.
So you have to bleed it out?
Yes.
Wow.
You've
got to bleed
blood.
It out. Yeah.
You've
got to
donate
blood. Here's a fascinating observation by an iron biologist. The terminal destination of oxygen and iron is the mitochondria.
So the final stop on the train track, on the last stop to get off, is the mitochondria,
right.
Your carburetor.
And the blessing of that is that iron is delivering oxygen to the mitochondria to make energy. And the curse of that is if the mitochondria cannot activate that oxygen, and if it cannot recycle that iron, then you have chaos in the mitochondria, and you're putting out an increase of exhaust. That's the very mechanism of the imbalance.
Yep.
That's where it starts, is in the mitochondria. That's where 90% of the energy is, and that's where 90% of the exhaust is.
Let me ask
right
you,
there in the mitochondria.
Let me ask you a question. There's actually a text here that said about a foot detox. Apparently they went and did that, and it said it smelled like metal, iron, water was brownish red. Do y'all know anything about foot detoxing? I've actually seen that before, where you put your feet in this solution of some kind, and it turns all weird colors and all that. But would that get iron out or no?
No, it doesn't. I mean, it doesn't. Dr. Liz and I have used it. Probably the best definitive source is Jerry Tennant. He's not at all in favor of those foot baths, and so it has the illusion of doing something, but it's not getting iron out. It just doesn't do that, and it looks really funky. It's like it is really weird what does come out, but it's not. That is not a mechanism to lower iron in the body.
You've got to donate blood.
But does it work at all as far as a detox at all? What do you think, Dr.?
I have not studied those foot baths enough to say, so I'm going to reserve my opinion on that. I know a lot of natural practitioners that do it. I can say that my mentors like Dr. Tennant and others, it's not something I hear spoken about at these conferences. If it had some major impact on detox, I think I would be hearing more about it. So, but I honestly haven't studied it, so I'll leave it at that.
Okay, next text is Joni wants to know, so sad, friend with scleroderma says they do complete iron studies, and she, like her mother, is low in iron. She feels way better when iron is supplemented. Why?
The body will produce red blood cells in response to any heavy metal being introduced into the body. back in the turn of the century, in the early 1900s, they used arsenic. And arsenic was very effective at increasing red blood cell production. Then they realized that's probably not a good idea because there's a downside. You know, I know we've shared this observation on the show before. You can use cocaine as a very effective way to wake up. And you can use alcohol as a very effective way to go to sleep. But they both have very devastating second and third order impacts on the body. People, again, it's the illusion of improvement, but physiologically, it's a disaster.
So short-term gain, long-term unintended consequences or disaster.
And the limitation is the blood work that's done for iron status is not able to get into the tissue. People are not aware of the amount of iron that's building up in their tissue. 90% of the macrophages in the human body are in the liver. And if the macrophage, the little Pac-Man that are very, very involved in fighting pathogens and recycling iron, they're amazingly intelligent cells in our body. If they start to fill up with iron, and they can't release that iron, then you've got a serious problem on your hands. And it will not show up on a blood test. The only way to find out tissue status of iron is to do either a needle biopsy, or, which is very painful, or do a T2 MRI, Tesla 2 MRI, which is very expensive. Those are the only two definitive ways of measuring true iron status in humans. The blood test is riddled with deception and confusion and innuendo. And that's where a lot of the problems, especially using serum ferritin as a marker for iron status, is wickedly incorrect.
And I'll add to that, Morley, those macrophages, those Pac-Men Morley was just talking about, that chew up the old red blood cells, because remember, red blood cells, you're recycling all the time. You're making new ones, and something has to happen to the old ones. And what happens to the old, worn-out red blood cells is these macrophage Pac-Men chew them up, eat them up, and then that iron is supposed to get recycled appropriately, and when you don't have bioavailable copper, it doesn't happen. So these macrophage Pac-Men get ballooned up with iron. And there's been many articles coming out over the past year or two, and maybe we can talk about this more after the break that we're up against, but about autoimmune disease, iron-laden macrophage and autoimmune disease. People could type in those two terms and look at all these papers. It would pop up. Well, scleroderma, the texter texted in, that's an autoimmune disease. And I don't know this case. I don't know the patient, but I can say in any autoimmune disease, the first two things I'm looking at is their gut, what's their gut flora, their gut bacteria, and their gut health, and their diet, like, and their minerals. What is their iron status? Because the iron-laden macrophage studies that are coming out with autoimmune point to these Pac-Men full of iron go into overdrive with chewing up not only old dead cells, but can also start chewing up your own body. So in rheumatoid arthritis, that's your joints. In scleroderma, that's your connective tissue. Lupus, that can be your skin, and all other, in MS, that's the myelin sheath and your nerves. So all these autoimmune diseases, the Pac-Men can start chewing up, and they never kick into the next phase, which is the healing phase. So the Pac-Men are good to go clean up dead tissue, injured tissue, germs, but then after they chew it up with all this inflammation, they need to flip on to the next state. We call it M2 stage, and that's all the healing chemicals come out to regrow and heal that area. So in autoimmune disease, these macrophages that are full of iron get stuck in M1, and they're constantly chewing and fighting and inflammatory chemicals, and they're in the kill mode, the oxidative stress mode, and we diagnose that as autoimmune, like scleroderma. So I concur with Morley, unless this patient has been an active bleeder for some reason, she's had a ton of trauma and just bled a lot, or her menstrual cycles are extremely heavy and very frequent, like every 2 weeks, or lots of gastrointestinal bleeding, like a bleeding ulcer because she was taking a lot of Advil for her pain or whatever. I mean, there are some cases where there's tremendous bleeding, and this is very, very rare. So I'm not saying it's impossible, but the hemoglobin would be low, and there'd be some indications that this patient would really need iron. The vast majority of these patients on iron, there's no bleeding history. They've been eating the standard American diet of 18 milligrams of Cheerios, of iron in one bowl of Cheerios. They've had plenty of iron in their body. So almost always the iron is stored in the tissue. It looks low in the blood because of all this inflammation. Because remember, inflammation, you can get quote-unquote anemia of chronic disease, aptly or otherwise known as anemia of chronic inflammation. So you can look anemic in your blood work, but all the iron is stuck in the tissue because of chronic inflammation. And that's the most likely scenario with the scleroderma patient. So we can get into that more, or we can move on to the next topic after the break. So we're with Morley Robbins. His website is RCP. That stands for Root Cause Protocol, RCP123, the numbers, 123.org. And, of course, Dr. Ben Edwards, You're the Cure is the show. VeritasMedical.com is our website. So stick with us. We'll be right back.
Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580. Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. Past archived programs, other valuable information, veritasmedical.com. Right here on the show, on the next segment, of course, Morley Robbins joining us today on the program. And welcome back in, Dr. Edwards.
All right. Thank you, Wade. We're going to dive right back in. Morley Robbins is with us today, RCP123.org. And also, I'm going to go ahead and throw out a plug for VeritasMarket.com. It's now open to the public, where we put bioavailable copper and sea salt and magnesium, vitamin C, whole food vitamin C, all these things that we're talking about, cod liver oil. They're available on there. We try to bring those high-quality products at a very reasonable price. So VeritasMarket.com, everybody can check it out. All right, guys, I just want to I know we covered a lot, so let me just have everyone take a deep breath. And I want everyone to remember, all we're trying to do is get us to start living, eating, thinking. 100 years ago, we weren't sick, and now we're the sickest country in the world. And Dr. Weston A. Price, a dentist in the 1920s, 1930s, traveled the world at this perfect time. It was this turning point in the world where there were all these old traditional societies eating traditional foods. And these were in the Orient, in Africa, in Europe, in the Americas, and he studied them. But each one of these communities also started to be infiltrated by modern stuff, mostly modern food, mostly enriched flour and sugar. And what he documented was a loss of resiliency. So these people in one village who were still eating their traditional food did not get tuberculosis. They did not get heart disease and cavities. They were strong and healthy. Their relatives right down the road at a village 20, 50 miles away, same genetics, same country, same people groups. But the other village was exposed to, had access to the sugar and refined flours. They got tuberculosis and died. They got cancer. They started to get heart disease. They got the cavities. It was simply a matter of the terrain. The environment had changed. What they were putting in their mouth had changed. One of the doctors at the conference in California this week, she's an environmentalist doctor, meaning she specializes in looking at all these environmental factors in these really sick patients. She is in Martha's Vineyard. She was very sick herself. And she lumped all these different specialties, whether you're a rheumatologist or endocrinologist or an internal medicine doctor or a functional or integrative medicine, all these different specialties, she put it all under one umbrella, and she called it environmental medicine, which obviously that's her specialty. But what I translated that to was, and all this lady does is focus on the external environment. She doesn't care about the genes. She doesn't care about all these different labels and then all these different specific protocols to tackle every symptom and quote unquote disease. She focuses on what's wrong with this person's environment. And of course, she's looking at EMS and all these other stressors, and that's okay. Like I said, offload those environmental stressors. But increase your capacity, increase your resiliency by getting bioavailable copper up, getting magnesium up, getting your sea salt in, getting all the trace minerals in, getting the iron down, the donation of the blood. It's the whole root cause protocol. And the whole point of that protocol really is to get ceruloplasmin working again. That is your master antioxidant. We've talked about it as a decathlete. We've talked about it as a Swiss Army knife on steroids. It can have all these different functions in the body. It's an amazing antioxidant. It gives you that resiliency factor. It needs bioavailable copper. So that's the overview again. Real quick, Morley, before you can add to that ceruloplasmin comment, zinc. I get this a lot, supplementing with zinc. It seems to be more of a hot topic lately. I have people, in fact, I had somebody text me over the weekend. They took a 50 milligram zinc and ended up in horrible stomach pain. And why am I in stomach pain? Now, that was some acute issue. I have no idea why he was in stomach pain. But in general, zinc. What's the deal with people taking zinc? Why is it the hot topic? And what does it do when you supplement with zinc?
It's hot because a lot of people are suggesting that low zinc is the problem. When in fact, when a liver is under stress, it loses magnesium. That's a fact. When the liver loses that magnesium, it replaces it with zinc, which takes it out of the bloodstream. It's just one of the quirky responses of the body. So the zinc looks low in the blood test. And then the practitioner of all faiths and persuasions will advise the client to take zinc supplements, but not knowing that that zinc will trigger another protein called metallothionein, which binds up copper. And then when the copper gets bound up, then you lose the ability to digest food, to make energy. It's very disruptive.
Okay.
Why did the liver get stressed out? Because there's too much iron in that liver.
That's what that bowl of Cheerios with all that extra iron, the standard American diet with all this excess iron, gets stored in the liver.
Right.
Stresses the liver.
Again, we keep coming back to the same mechanism, and I think the challenge for really smart people is it can't be this simple.
Yeah.
And if it is this simple, then why don't I know this already? And if it's this important, why hasn't my doctor taught me this?
Right.
And it's just we've not been given complete information. I think that's the most important thing. And I think it's not complete information, and there are unintended consequences. That's been your clarion bell for 2 years, is right. We didn't know this, I didn't get trained in this, and there have been unintended consequences. People just need to know that.
Right. Well, even these doctors this weekend, I mean, they're from all over the world. The doctor in Nantucket, or in Martha's Vineyard, super smart, brilliant people, and they help people. They help a lot of really sick people. But even they're missing this piece of it. And I think part of it, even from a doctor's perspective, is that simplicity. Oh, that makes this too simple. And then I don't have to do all these fancy IVs and treat people for 3 straight months. Every single day she was giving her patients IVs, which helped, and I'm not knocking her for it. But I'm saying, why are we so sick? Why do we need all this intervention? And when an answer comes, it's more simplistic. It's hard for patients, for sure, general public, but doctors even, to accept it. But it makes sense when you look at it historically, where we used to be a resilient people. Human beings in general have always been a resilient people. As long as you nourish them, give them proper nutrition, and I also say hydration, movement, and peace. And that did come out in the conference too, the stress, just emotional, any kind of stress, just killer, absolutely killer. And as we've already mentioned, one of the things stress will do is kill your magnesium. But the resiliency factor, we've got to bring this ceruloplasmin. We're off air. You called it the God particle. And I think that's an apt name for it. We were calling it the Swiss Army knife and a decathlete, but it's this amazing molecule or protein that acts in all these different functions in the body. And it is the main, resiliency factor, I think I'd call it, that gives us that resiliency. If it's working. It's got to be functional. It's got to be working. And again, that's the whole point of the root cause protocol, is to keep that thing working.
I think the maybe the most important thing that we can close with, we've talked about this before, but I keep bumping up against research on the relationship between ascorbic acid and ceruloplasmin. And we've talked about the fact that ascorbic acid is not equal to whole food vitamin C. Whole food vitamin C is like your car that has a steering wheel, four wheels, an engine, and a shell. That's the whole food vitamin C molecule, many moving parts. These vitamins are called wheels within wheels. And ascorbic acid is the shell of your car and no moving parts. I found a reference about a year ago from 1999 from some researchers in Texas who identified that ascorbic acid was very harmful and destructive to ceruloplasmin status, and I was quite surprised to learn that. So for the last year, I have been methodically looking for other references. I'm now up to 15 different world-class scientists demonstrating that ascorbic acid is violently destructive to ceruloplasmin status. The very first time it was mentioned was by the two scientists who discovered ceruloplasmin. Then the next time it was mentioned was in 1948. Then in 1963, several scientists from Bell Laboratories that make phones were studying human ceruloplasmin. I have no idea why a phone company would be worrying about human ceruloplasmin, but in 1963, in the second sentence of the article, they make specific reference to the destructive capacity of ascorbic acid to destroy ceruloplasmin. I've now found 13 other citations. And I think the public needs to understand that there's a major difference between whole food vitamin C, which has the tyrosinase enzyme that has copper inside it. That's whole food vitamin C, as Mother Nature intended it, as is found in properly raised food. And that is violently different from ascorbic acid, which is made by Hoffman LaRoche in New Jersey. They make 90% of the world's ascorbic acid, and then they sell it to 115 supplement manufacturers who then compete with each other about whose is better when it all comes from the same plant made from GMO cornstarch mixed with sulfuric acid. So people don't understand what the confusion is when they don't realize the impact of ascorbic acid to the God particle. It is like putting a stake through the heart of the God particle.
Yeah. So, folks, you need to realize vitamin C fortified foods, vitamin C fortified orange juice, vitamin C in anything. Flip over the bottle and read the ingredients. It'll be ascorbic acid only. That's what we're talking about. Now, there are whole food-based vitamin Cs. Innate Response is a good one. Pure Radiance is a good one. We have one now at Veritas Market that's a Veritas one. It's very similar to Innate. And now some of these, like Innate, we've talked about this before. It'll say ascorbic acid on the label and some milligram number. And then it'll list all the different berries and orange peel, citrus peels, all the different food particles, the whole food portion of it. And as my understanding, I know for sure the Veritas vitamin C one, these are food-based ascorbic acids. It has to do with FDA labeling requirements. If you put the milligrams of vitamin C on there, then you have to actually be able to prove there's this much ascorbic acid. So it says ascorbic acid on the label, but it's from a whole food source. There's all the whole food with it. So that's a question I get a lot. So I wanted to clarify that about the Innate. Which I think, Morley, you recommend that Innate, don't you?
Yes.
Yep. Okay, real quick, we got just a few minutes left, I think. 5 minutes, Wade's telling me. Can you briefly, and we can talk about this at another show also, but hyaluronic acid, if you're able to briefly talk about that, because you just sent me an article about that, the importance of that, and how ascorbic acid kills the hyaluronic acid.
So one of my favorite baristas at Starbucks, he once said, you know, Morley, it's not the gunman that kills you. It's not the gun that kills you. And it's not the bullet that kills you. It's the bullet hole. And the reason why the bullet hole kills you is you can't close it up and repair the wound fast enough. Obviously the blood is going to leak out. The wound repair function and these macrophages that we keep talking about have many different jobs. One of them is first responder to an infection, and they create inflammation, an acute phase of inflammation, to burn up the pathogen. And then they flip from what's called the M1 state, inflammation, to the M2 state, which is wound repair. Well, wound repair runs on the chassis of hyaluronic acid. And hyaluronic acid runs on the energy of copper. And again, we're back to another, it's a profoundly important chemical in our body. Maybe this would be the Son of God particle. And it orchestrates the entire process of wound repair in terms of collagen formation, elastin formation, bringing in the lysyl oxidase when it's needed to knit things up. It has a relationship with retinol. I'm just beginning to learn about it, and it's absolutely mesmerizing to think that no one's talking about it, except what I think is very entertaining is that in the cosmetic field, they regularly use retinol, hyaluronic acid, and copper for the outside of our skin, when in fact we need those same three ingredients on the inside of our body. But it's been marginalized to the outside, so we looked okay, even though we're Swiss cheese inside. Yeah. So hyaluronic acid is it deserves a show in and of itself, but it's an amazing mechanism that can be turned against us, and that's what atherosclerosis is. It's hyaluronic. That's become a street gang member because of changes in iron status and the existence of ascorbic acid. And it becomes a very problematic part, even though it was designed from the get-go to be this orchestrator of wound repair and a healing response. Absolutely amazing.
Okay. Awesome. Quick question, I think.
Yeah, quick text. Is it better to take lemon with RCP than whole food vitamin C?
Well, lemon is whole food vitamin C, so I'm assuming they're meaning a supplemental form, like a powder or a capsule like our Veritas vitamin C or Innate, I'm assuming is a question. I always say food's best because it's fresh. There's live ingredients in that lime or lemon that you're squeezing into the water. So as long as you can get enough of it in, which, I mean, just get a good lime squeezer, lemon squeezer, and do it. So I kind of prefer that. I guess you cover bases and do both. Put a little of that pure radiance powder and some vitamins or lime or lemon. What say you, Morley? Okay.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you took the words right out of my mouth. I would do both.
Okay.
I would do some more.
I want to part with this little story, and I will give credit where credit is due. Dr. Erica Mallory Blythe, an amazing doctor from England, she was presenting at the EMF conference this weekend. She talked about this tsunami that's approaching, and actually I think it's already hitting when you look at the health disease statistics, which they went over these, the millennials, Gen X and millennials, the rates of some of these quote-unquote diseases, and a lot of them were more the psych ones, anxiety and depression and suicide, but even diabetes. It's unbelievable, the escalation of these diseases and the amount of dollars we're spending on them. But she's talking about the tsunami that's coming, and are you paying attention? Are you looking at the warning signs? She talked about the two groups of people 10 years ago when that tsunami hit in Thailand. So there was a group of people, they call them the sea gypsies, the Burmese boatmen versus these sea gypsies. The sea gypsies survived. The Burmese boatmen did not survive. And so when they interviewed the sea gypsies, they said, we paid attention. We looked at the warning signs. And these sea gypsies are amazing. This group of folks, they have adapted to be able to dive, free dive, down to 75 feet to the ocean floor. And they can control their buoyancy somehow. They can stand on the bottom of the ocean floor with a spear, like a statue waiting for their prey to come by, and they stab it. They can swim for 7 minutes. She showed pictures underwater. Their pupils did not dilate like normally, or if we jumped in any amount of water, it's, when it gets darker, our pupils would dilate, and their pupils stayed constricted, so their vision for fine things was more acute, so they could see their what they were trying to kill on the bottom of the ocean floor. So all these cool adaptions. But they were good observers, and they observed that dolphins were starting to swim deeper, and deep sea creatures were actually crawling up towards the surface. Crustaceans, like the crabs, the hermit crabs on the beach, were crawling into the jungle. The cicadas fell silent. Just a lot of different little clues, and they knew to get to the deep water or to run to the mountain, and they did. And this group, the sea gypsies, survived. The Burmese boatmen did not. And one of the sea gypsies said, when they were asked, why didn't the Burmese survive? And they said they were looking for squid. They were not looking at anything. They saw nothing. They looked at nothing. They didn't know how to look. And her point was, as this tsunami of overwhelming health disaster, all these diseases are overwhelming Americans, do we have the evidence of its arrival? Do we have the clues that it's coming? Do you want to be a blind boatman, or do you want to be a keen sensing sea gypsy? And I hope the listeners to You're the Cure are the keen sensing sea gypsy. You're taking in all this evidence, all this information, these mountains and mountains of research Morley brings from 100 years ago to current, and just connecting all these dots. And then go apply it. Apply it in your life. Take these warnings, and when that tsunami comes, you'll be able to overcome it because you've built your resiliency factors. You don't need to be a health statistic. You don't need to be these one out of two that's going to have cancer and the dementia. I mean, all these kids with developmental delay and autism and ADD. I mean, the young folks' brains are inflamed. The old folks' brains are inflamed. Everyone in between's having heart attacks and getting cancer and autoimmune disease, and it's nuts, and it doesn't have to be that way. So be a sea gypsy. Morley Robbins, thank you for being with us, rcp123.org. This is Ben Edwards, veritasmedical.com, veritasmarket.com. I'll have to start plugging to get your nutrients. When you can't get it in your food, like we told the caller or the texter, get it in your lemons and limes, but when you can't, supplement where you're deficient. Morley, thank you for joining us, as always, very enlightening.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to have this conversation. Okay. Appreciate the chance.
Until next month, we'll do it again.